Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. My name is Matt Harrington. I am your host, and we are going to be talking all about ABA research. In this podcast, we break down one ABA research article per episode, taking out the key findings for you so that on your morning commute or on your way into work, you can become a better behavior analyst. Now, let's get to the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. My name is Matt, and I'm so excited to get started with you today. So we are continuing the essential reading series, the series that I think is crucial for you to be a really amazing behavior analyst, whether you've been certified for 1 year or 10 years. These are the articles that I would say you have to read. And we're continuing with essential reading number 4, Saini, Fisher, and Retzlin colleagues, a review of functional analysis methods for addressing idiosyncratic variable. This is from JAVA 52.3. So there's a lot of articles that I could have pulled for the functional analysis. I could have pulled the original 1984 Iwata article. I could have pulled the 2014 Hanley article on the ISCA. I could have pulled on the function of efficacy in functional analyses, a consideration of ISCA versus more traditional method. I could have looked at speed. All of these things are crucial. Right? All of these different types and flavors and styles of functional analyses are going to be helpful. I'm not somebody who says that you absolutely need to do an ISCA or you absolutely need to do a traditional isolated functional analysis. The reality is, and I say this with my full chest, is that the functional analysis you use should be dependent on the learner in front of you. There are situations where you use isolated. There are situations where you use synthesized. That is a longer conversation, one that should really be reserved for its own podcast. But regardless of which type of functional analysis you use, right, regardless if you synthesized or isolated, there is going to be situations where your functional analyses come out undifferentiated. Essentially, the variables that you are looking at were not the variables that ended up being relevant to that person's behavior. For example, you run a traditional functional analysis, you have your attention, escape, tangibles, automatic, etc., and you get a mess of jumbled up data following. What do you do next? We know the functional analysis is the gold standard, but what happens when your data doesn't actually lead to any meaningful intervention? That means you have to modify and change and pivot. And that is what I like about this article. I think we're all pretty comfortable with the concept at as BCBAs, we should be running functional analyses. And maybe we're not running full experimental functional analyses. Maybe we're doing direct observation. Maybe we're even doing interview. And there are pros and cons and weaknesses. Once again, it's their conversation. But at its core, I think a foundational skill here is not to identify the function, but to get jumbled up data and then modify and then get the function to actually lead to your intervention. Because that happens way more often than a perfectly clean functional analysis. So this article serves as a guiding light and a review to tons of different ways to modify functional analyses. So Saini and colleagues reviewed over 100 empirical studies that modified FA conditions to account for idiosyncratic variables, whether those variables be specific situations that were brought up in the caregiver interview, whether that be things that were found during the initial functional analysis process. It took messy data and then did something and then made it clean. Essentially, weird FAs. The goal was to classify the types of modifications used, identify the common idiosyncratic variables, and then start to provide a roadmap and strategies for adapting functional analyses. I think this really speaks to the research to practice gap, right? Because we have this situation where as we read research papers and they're beautiful graphs. Everything's perfect. There's not a single thing out of place. But the reality is that's not how practice is. When you're actually in practice, things are messy. Graphs don't work. Clients get behavior changes. The amount of variables that you're accounting for is significantly higher. And so because the variables are higher, so will the variability be. And so what this is saying is we know that your graphs aren't going to look as good as the research. Here's what to do instead. Because oftentimes, and this is like a little behind the scenes baseball situation, researchers just don't publish bad graphs. And it's a big problem. It's talked about all the time, the file drawer problem, right? But the reality is that if you're running a long research project and you have 28 really good graphs that go along with a core theme of your project. And then you have two messy ones that maybe don't contradict it, but they add a little bit of confusion and you're like, what happened here? Odds are they're not getting published. Now, concurrent case series tries to solve this by saying no matter what, the next 50 people were publishing, as well as some other more ethical questions of researchers and publications are working to this. But as of now, there's a bunch of papers in file drawers, right? Or I guess now electronic file drawers that are never going to see the light of day because they were too messy. Once again, this article hopes to address that. So what were the key findings? The antecedent modifications were the most common. So almost 60% of the studies altered the antecedents in some way, such as the setting event, the task type, and demand intensity. Oftentimes, this changed ambiguous, confusing FA outcomes to clear outcomes. So let's go through a couple of those. So you have a functional analysis. Maybe you're doing it in your clinic playroom, and you're doing attention, and you're providing the correct attention and removing it, and you're going back and forth, and the data just is not clear at all. One thing that you could do to change the antecedent environment to clarify that data would be to change who's delivering the attention or to change where the attention is being delivered. The setting event of the functional analysis was in a playroom, perhaps by a client who they don't know, or the setting event was in the playroom with a therapist who maybe they don't know. And instead, we're going to do it in the home setting with the primary caregiver being the one to modify the attention. Same with demands. Maybe we're doing easy demands, now we're to harder demands, or vice versa. Essentially, changes to the original functional analysis to make it more like what happens in the natural environment. And that's the big theme that we're going to continually pull out here. Almost all of these modifications are focused on, can we make it more like the natural environment?
80 CEUs, $10 a month, 3 to 5 new CEUs being added every single month. Straightforward, simple, that's CEU streamlined. I created the Netflix of CEUs with all of not only my old content, but 3 to 5 new hours of CEUs being added every single month. Right now, we're at 85 videos and climbing more and more with over 400 behavior analysts getting all the CEUs they could dream about for only $10 a month. So if you're interested, go ahead and go to behavioristbookclub.com and click the link that says Streamline Info, or check the link below this episode. I know that you will love it, and I guarantee you that you will get all the CEUs you need at, finally, an affordable price.
Next, what about some idiosyncratic functions that emerged? Some common kind of side functions were access to rituals, escape from specific tasks, not general tasks, attention from specific people, not everybody, transitions or activity interruptions from some things and not others. Once again, this brings out the importance of a really good interview to inform your functional analysis so you can get a very fine-tuned, individualized functional analysis instead of this general one. Consequences were being modified, 38% adjusted consequences, such as novel reinforcers, other rituals, tangibles, things like that. In over 90% of these reviewed studies, the modified FA eventually led to a clear outcome. Now, let's be real here. The file drawer problem is definitely in effect here. I doubt that they would do a whole published study on a bunch of FA modifications that didn't end up working. But it's worthwhile to note that modifying your functional analysis does oftentimes lead to a more clear outcome if your modifications are right. Modified FAs were especially useful in those naturalistic settings where standard FAs were less feasible. And that, I think, is the big key takeaway here, is that the idea of a standard FA is stupid. The idea of one set of 4 conditions that can be universally applied without individualization is not a reality in ABA or any health and service field. And it never was supposed to be. I think that when you look at the original 84 paper by Iwata and his colleagues, those were individualized conditions. It just so happened that the folks that he was applying them to were people who needed those types of conditions. The concept of the attention and the tangible and the escape, they're based off positive and negative reinforcement. Within those conditions, right, within what is happening within the attention, what is happening within the escape, was always designed to be individualized. I think we got a little too into this idea of like copy pasting an intervention from one person or an assessment from one person to another. And we got to the point where we were like, what's happening? Why are we getting the right result? Because we weren't individualizing. And that's the key takeaway here. You need to individualize your functional analyses so that they actually are relevant to the natural environment your client is living in, and thus producing a realistic function for you to work off of. One size does not fit all. If your FA is inconclusive, the first place I go to is back to the caregiver interview. Did you have a really strong, open-ended, exploratory interview? Were you able to find lots of different variables, lots of different idiosyncratics? Does the functional analysis you're running now give you deja vu for the one you did last week? If so, you're not individualized enough. You have to continually modify and individualize so that you can get the right FA the first time. Now, I think that there's a common argument that I see here where instead of individualizing things so aggressively, like you're talking about, Matt, instead what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a standard FA. If that doesn't work, then I'm going to individualize. That way I don't waste resources individualizing if I don't have to. And the problem here is that the goal of the assessment is to get rid of the assessment, or the goal of the assessment is to get through the assessment and get it to inform an intervention. I would argue that 9 times out of 10, if not 99 times out of 100, it is way faster to do a longer caregiver interview, maybe an extra 2 hours, and instead of doing a standard FA and then individualizing, go straight to the individualization and then modify it if you have to from there. This is essentially the core of the ISCA. The reason the ISCA got so popular so fast is because it led to differentiator results so darn fast. And the reason was not because of the synthesized variables. Now, that was a big part of it, but I think the main reason was because of the individualization of the conditions, because it was informed by an open-ended interview. If you look at those original ISCA papers, while synthesized reinforcement was a big focus of kind of the arguments of the papers, because they were trying to really hone that point in, if you actually look at the condition, it was not escape to a tangible. It was escape from a very specific worksheet with a very specific grade level with this pencil, and two, not just a random iPad, but these set of toys under these conditions with this attention. That individualization there, I think, is what really led to very quick differentiated outcomes. So overall, I think we hit on this point a couple of times, but make sure you are individualizing your FAs. And when you get messy data, the next step is to go back to the caregiver interview, individualize further, and test again. Testing FAs is a natural part of the process. You're not always going to get a function right away. You're not always going to get your perfect intervention right away. Testing is a normal part of the learning process, but it is absolutely crucial that as you test, you also individualize so that your tests actually meet in the end. All right, that's what I got for you. That's essential reading. I think that's number 4. I really enjoyed talking about this topic. It's one of my favorites. I will see you in the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. I hope you learned something, and I hope you continue to learn something as you tune in Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays to the Behaviorist Book Club. If you liked this episode, consider leaving us a review, sharing it with a friend, and most importantly, using it in your clinical practice. There's no other reason why I do this than to make you a better behavior analyst and to make myself a better clinician. See you in the next one.